Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Bolt here, and joining me today is Dr. Henry Cloud. He's the New York Times bestselling author of a bunch of books, including the book Boundaries, Necessary Endings, Changes That Heal, and a bunch of other books. His books have sold nearly 20 million copies. He's also a leadership consultant, working with CEOs, Fortune 500 companies, churches, and smaller private businesses. He's the author of one of my favorite books of all time, Boundaries. We've done an entire company book club on this book, bought it for everyone on the team. I've bought this for people that are close to me in my life. I think it's a book that I find myself constantly recommending, and probably top 10, top 20 books of all time for myself. So I'm excited today. We're going to be talking about writing a perennial bestseller. How do you sell 20 million copies and turning your book into a series, which is something he's done really well. So Dr. Henry, great to have you here.
Good to be here. I love talking to people that want to write books. I always run into these people. Oh, I want to write a book. I got a book. I go, why don't you write it? And they go, well, I don't have time. Don't give me that excuse, dude. We'll talk about that if you want to, but you have time. Stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love people that have something inside that they want to get out.
Yeah. So talk to me. I did some digging, but I couldn't find it. Was Boundaries the first book that you wrote, or had you written multiple books before then?
No, it was the, it was actually the second book. And what had happened was I wrote a book, my first book, which was my life's passion, I thought, in my life's work, this one book that I wanted to do. It's called Changes That Heal. And which is an interesting story in and of itself. But the second section of Changes That Heal, you know, there are four big changes, developmental changes that people need to make, you know, life work in these areas. And the second section was called Boundaries. And so we were doing public seminars, you know, big seminars on that book. And we were doing an offsite planning one day, strategic planning day. And the consultant said, when you guys go speak, what are most of the questions about? And we started laughing and we said, oh, it's by far the boundary section. And he said, well, why don't you write a book on boundaries? And I said, we actually started laughing. And I literally said this and I meant it. I said, oh, that's a great idea, because if we wrote the book, then that could answer the questions and we could move on and not have to keep talking about this. Here we are decades later, still talking about it because it hit a nerve, I guess.
Yeah. And when I think there's a good lesson there for folks, which is, what's the thing that people keep asking you about? And that's probably the thing that you should write about. How did you go from, this is a small section of the book. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I would also say that's true. You know, I think of when I talk to people about, you know, they're trying to find what they want to do and that kind of struggle, which everybody has. I always say, look, make sure these three things come together. Make sure that it's something you're good at. Okay. You got to bring something to the party. All right. Number one. Number two, make sure you care about it. Because if this thing works, you don't want to be doing something that you don't care about. It's got to be passionate to you. And number three, that there's got to be a need in the world for what you're doing. And you lose either any one of those three, and we're down the wrong trail, in my view. So, it's very important to ask yourself, where do I find myself being helpful to people?
And for you, that when it transitioned from Changes That Heal to the Boundaries book, it was, I'm assuming you felt like, hey, I'm good at this. I care about it. And this is definitely a need because people are telling me about it.
Yeah, well, it would certainly it would answer all of those three things. The last thing I wanted to do was be pigeonholed, you know, sort of like a, if you're an actor, you don't want to be typecast, you know, you're the boundaries guy, because my passion is to connect people to God's ways and the created order of the universe. It doesn't even have to be a faith book, but the ways that life works in the areas of their clinical functioning, how they feel, depression, anxiety, stress, all that, their relationships, and then their performance lives, reaching goals and dreams. And so you can see in that picture why, you know, working with leaders and CEOs and businesses, that's kind of all three of those are there, even with families. And so I didn't want to talk about this one issue because life is much bigger than boundaries. But when people come into an emergency room, they're going to be talking about what hurts first. And a lot of the people's hurts had to do with boundaries. And so that's still true. But hopefully do a lot more than just boundaries.
For sure. And can you talk to that? Can you speak to that? Cause I feel like that I hear that all the time when we're recommending people, hey, get more specific. What's more niche, like a specific problem that you can solve. And that's the common thing. I don't want to be the blank person. So I guess maybe a two-part question. How did preemptively you say, hey, I don't want to be the boundaries guy, but then, all right, maybe this is really a need. But then also after that,
yeah,
how have you segued that to say, all right, I feel like I'm being kind of pigeonholed as the boundaries guy?
Yeah, and one of the problems with publishing is that publishers will want to come and do the sequel to whatever you've done that works. They don't want to hear anything else. We want you to do a book on boundaries with goldfish, right? And so I've had to turn away so many things that really didn't meet those three criteria for me. But I have written, so we did after boundaries, we did boundaries in marriage, boundaries with kids, and boundaries in dating were the other boundary series that I did with John. And then because most of my leadership or most of my work has been in the leadership space in the last probably 15 plus years. So I wrote a book called Boundaries for Leaders, which contextualizes it in how people run companies and run teams and stuff like that. So publishers will really, really, really want to, they want to use your platform, right? Which makes sense, right? It's working. How can we jump on board and ride the wave? And that's where sequels come from a lot of times. And so sometimes it's wise and sometimes it's not. It's not where you want to go. And you got to decide that.
And
so I'm inclusive. Yeah. I'm inclusive of it, but I don't want to be limited to it, I guess.
Right. And how do you balance that? Because you've got series of the books, but then you've got a lot of great work that you're doing with churches. You've got books on other topics, obviously. Like, how do you decide, do I double down on what's working here? Do I kind of foray into new markets, things I'm more passionate about? Like, yeah. How do you balance that?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer that may or may not be something that people agree with, but it's the way I have to live my life. And that is, I never want to be market driven. In other words, I don't look to see, you know, there's a market for this, you know, and kind of following that. To me, it's sort of like the cart before the horse. One of my favorite proverbs says that a person's heart determines their path and then God directs their steps. And so that's where I think you've got to start from your innermost, you know, your North Star, if you will, your, I don't know, what did my kids call it when they were, what American Girl had a term for this, what, your inner star or something, you know, what your heart beats for. And so I think it's got to, it's really got to come from there. And so I don't write books based on what I think the market thing is. I write books from what I am experiencing over and over and over that I see as a theme in my work. So a great example is I wrote a book called Necessary Endings. And Necessary Endings has done very, very well. It's used by companies and CEOs and even individuals, because it kind of, you know, we have endings in our own lives that we need to execute. And that'd be a great example, because I have a process by which I write books. And the beginning of the process is in my work, because I'm not an author. That's not what I do. I'm a practitioner. Okay. So in my work, I'll find myself having the same conversation or seeing something over and over and over, which first of all drives me to have to make sure I'm developing a competency to be helpful in that issue that keeps recurring. And I might go research that. I might take continuing ed on that. I might buy 1,000 books, read journals, all that. But if I'm seeing something, this matters enough to where people are stuck with it and they're not finding help anywhere. So I try to become helpful. And then I will, and I'm not doing this to write a book, but I will field test that. In other words, I got to know, what are we talking about? Is this theory or is this really work and is it helpful? And so I keep a file. When I run into something that seems like this might be an issue that's important, I'll open a file on it in my, you know, in OneNote is where I do it. And let's call that, you know, the important thoughts file. And then if it keeps happening, I'll take it out of that file and I'll put it in a potential book file. And then when I do that, then once it's a potential book, then I stay on the lookout for things I'm running into in life, in my practice, in research that I'm doing, in my personal life, stories, anything that relates to that topic, I throw it in that file. And then at some point, that's going to emerge and kind of stand out of the crowd. And then that's when I do a book deal. And once I get a book deal done, now I've got a deadline and the presses are rolling in terms of a timeline. So that's how I do it. And I could go further into that about the system of how I write a book, which I think everybody, if you don't have a system, you ain't going to do it. Trust me. And everybody's got a system who does this well. So they're all different, but I can tell you what mine is.
Yeah, I'd love to touch on that. And so I'll just kind of repeat back what I've heard so far, and then maybe you can elaborate on the system as a whole. So you're a practitioner, as you said. So you're in the field practicing the things, bubbling up important thoughts. When those important thoughts get, there's enough of them or enough around a theme, it sounds like that goes to potential book topic. Now you've got a theme on that topic. And then now you're actively looking to what could I add to this overarching topic. Is that right? And then where do you go from there? Like, what is your writing process look like?
Yeah, for example, in the what do I add thing, that would be, let me tell you how I wrote my first book, because this is where I learned this. Okay. I was in my 20s and I was in practice and I had done a lot of model building, if you will, because I like conceptual models of how people grow and change and all of that. And so I was working with some organizations and using these models to teach them how to deal with people's issues, right? And so I'm doing more of this with this one particular organization. And they said, is this written down anywhere? And I said, no, not really. I was just working, right? It'd be like a GP who's giving flu shots or something, right? And why would you write that down? This is what I do. So they said, well, we'd like to turn this into something that we could train our people with and you know, scale it. So would you write a book on it? Now, at that time, I almost just gotten my PhD. And part of why I'd just gotten it was, you know, a PhD in clinical psychology, you go to 4 years after college, you know, it's like med school, you go to 4 years, then there's another year of internship, and then there's three more years in there of gathering hours, and you have to write a dissertation. Well, a dissertation to me looked like an impossible to write. I can't get myself dressed in the morning. I wasn't organized enough to do. I cannot fit. So I kept putting it off, right? And so finally, I got the dissertation written. I got my PhD. So somebody told me you got to write a book on this. That looked like a monumental. There is no way I can a book. How would you write a book? And they said, because your ideas are important. We want them. This has to be in a book. I said, I don't know how to write a book. And they said, we'll get you a consultant to help you write the book. Now that resonated with me because I know that whatever ability we don't feel like we have to continue to think we do when we don't is not going to work. We got to bring it from outside of the system. So I said, okay, now that makes sense to me. So he locked me in a room and he said, here's what I want you to do. Write down, go away and come back in a week. And I want to know your 50 most important constructs that are in your system of thinking. Okay. And I came those, and he said, all right, I want you to get that down to 12. And he said, now what he was doing statistically is called a factor analysis. And that's how people do regression analyses to figure out where the variance is. So ultimately he said, now I want you to take it and how far down can you get it? And I got it down to basically 5. Okay. And so then he said, all right, I think that might be the structure of your book. Ultimately, it was. That's Changes That Heal. Now, I also realized I didn't have time to write a book. I was working 50 plus hours a week. And so I figured, okay, I'm not going to be able to take time off to write a book. So how am I going to write a book? So what I decided was that I took a, and so this would have been, before we had smartphones to do all this. I got a stack of 3x5 cards and I kept it in my pocket all the time. And I said, I'm going to commit to every time I run across an example clinically with a patient or an organization, every time I read an article, every time, if it loads on one of these five things, I'm gonna write it down on 3x5 cards so I won't forget it. And I put a 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5, meaning which section of the book this fits into, drew a circle around the 5 or the 4 or 3. And I came home the other day and I throw these in a big cardboard box. And so I just said, I'm gonna do this for a while. Well, the box starts, getting pretty robust after months and months and months. So then I said, okay, I think I've got the 80-20 rule. I got, most of what's going to be covered is in this box already. So now I got to write it. So here's what I did. I made a vow that it was the 1st of December. I said, I can't not work. So here's what I did. Here's what I'm going to do. From 5 o'clock on Friday until Monday morning at 8 o'clock, I'm not going to do. Now, the reason I chose that is it's wintertime and I'm a golfer. And so, it's going to screw up less of my competitive golf world. From 5 o'clock on Friday night till Monday morning, it's going to be 100% devoted to writing this book. And I'll give myself one break, and Saturday night, I'm going to go out for dinner. I'll have a date or, hang out with friends or something. And so that's what I did. And June 1st, I had a manuscript. And so what I learned in doing that, I used to do it in a cardboard box, but that worked for me to break it down into what the main ideas were and then to gather the content over time and file it. And then at some point it's bursting at the seams or you don't have a book. If it's not bursting at the seams, start over, right? And then you got to sit down, you have to figure out some sort of structure to write it in. And now what I do is I have an Excel spreadsheet that I begin when I start to write a book. And Excel or Word has word counts, right? So I have a cadence of, I've got the chapters designed. I start with an outline. It never ends up to be the outline, but I start with an outline. And then by certain dates, I have to hit certain word counts. That structure will structure me. And I don't have time with kids and, a multifaceted work life and all that. So there's no way in hell I could do Friday night till, Monday morning. But my word count thing will divvy me up into, and what I've learned is kind of like what John Grisham did. You know, he wrote his first book and he was a state legislator and an attorney full time. And he wrote A Time to Kill by getting up early and writing one page a day for a year. That's how he got his first book. Well, that's kind of similar to what I have to do. So that's a long way of telling you my system.
Yeah.
That's how I do it.
I love that. Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement. It's so crazy how similar our stories are and writing our first books, but then also seeing how that's evolved and how you're kind of, in a way, it's stuff we teach and talk about a lot of times, which is mind mapping, using that mind map to create an outline and a chapter by chapter kind of outline. And then, you know, pick your path, whether you're going, chipping away at it over a weekend or whether you're doing it one page at a time, 1,000 words a day or whatever that process looks like, but you're chipping away at it over a time period, which I think is super smart. And then also I love that you acknowledged that you're not always going to stick. You don't often stick to the exact outline. Cause I think that's
free. I never have.
Yeah.
I never have. And here's why for me, I'm not saying everybody should be like this. I don't even do that when I'm speaking. I've got a direction with points I know have to be in there. But what happens is in the process for me, I start going into a chapter or concept and that will hit a button of, oh my gosh, how did I not include this? And that becomes a different or chapter because the creative process will happen while you're writing. And so now sometimes you have to draw the boundaries and say, stop it. That's another book. I remember when I sent in my first manuscript, the publisher called me at 5 o'clock in the morning because he was on the East Coast. And that's why I remember this call. I answered the phone and he goes, Henry, I said, what? He says, you don't have to put everything you know in one book. And, oh, and kind of from my perspective, well, I'm only going to write one book. I didn't know I was going to write 40, but I just... And really had to get it down to, that's an important, you know, don't try to put everything in one. I walked away to see if I could get my, see if there's a way I could show you this. I don't know if this is going to work or not. If, let me see. So here is, let me see if, so I've got this folder here. Can you see that? No, it's not going to work.
A little bit. It looks like. Yeah, not great. Yeah.
Anyway, we show you the tree of how, you know, of all these things. And I'm writing, I'm in the process of intellectually, the conceptual work, I haven't started typing it yet. I'm writing a book called To My Friends. And it's the conversations about faith we never had. Things that I want to talk to my friends about, who know that I'm one of those Jesus people, but they also think I'm normal and that doesn't fit in their head. So we never really talked about it. So I'm writing this book. But you would see a whole list of individual notes on things that would be included in there. And what I'll do at the next step is I got to get in a room and go through all of that. And I narrow it down to what I call the keepers. And these are the things that are going to make it in the book. That's how I do it.
That's great. And so many things we talk about. And I think is I just loving what you're saying is, you know, the fact that you just talked about conceptualizing it first and you're like, I'm writing the book, but I'm not actually writing yet. And so giving yourself permission to be thinking through the concepts, narrowing down to the keepers, then writing and not having to put everything in one book.
Well, please, when somebody says, how long does it take you to write a book? I go, do you mean write the book or type it?
Mm.
Those are very, for me, very different tasks. Because to me, everybody's got a book in them. It's your story. You're living it every day. You just haven't typed it. And so I'm doing all this work and I'm gathering all the stories and all of this. Now, at some point, I got to sit down and type that out. But the book's probably taken me 5 years to write. Because the book is the story. Mm-hmm. The book, if you can sit down and write a book and you didn't have anything before you started typing it, then you're probably a fiction writer. Hmm. I mean, what the hell do you know? You don't know it before you start writing. So it you see what I'm saying here? Your life is writing the book. Your story is writing the book. Don't go anywhere without either you use your phone or a notepad to write down the ideas you get and the thoughts you get, even in the shower or in the car, because you think, oh yeah, I got to include that. It won't come back. You're going to lose it if you don't capture it. It's gone.
Do you think you had that in mind? I mean, now you're 40 books or whatever in, it's like this is baked into your way of living. Do you think you had that mindset before writing your first book, or was that something that after you did the first one, now that's intuitive and kind of second nature?
No, I had that mindset, but it wasn't about writing books. It was about the work. So I've always been, as I said, kind of a conceptual model builder. And my quest in my work was I really wanted to understand. I wanted to understand. It's like curiosity is probably my main driver. I just want to understand, why does somebody get depressed over that? Why does a CEO do that? You know, and I would... So, and that's kind of the mining part of it. And then that turned into maybe a helpful way to write a book.
Do you think your natural skill set of thinking in models or concepts, you think that's a necessary requirement to write great books? And if so, do you think is that nature versus nurture? Is that born or made?
It's both. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, what was the first part of the question? Is that a helpful?
Do you think that's a requirement? Like, necessary. That's a requirement to write a great book? Because I think you do it so well, and you do it so well in your books. And I think that's why your books are so impactful. It's funny going back in our conversation. You said, I don't really write market-driven books, but I use my work to write the book, which in a weird way is kind of, it's not market-driven, but it's like using it and it feeds the concepts and models. So yeah, do you think
when I say market-driven, if somebody comes and says, this is really selling right now, write a book on that. And I don't know anything about that. You know, if I wanted to sell a book, you know, pick a title. You want to go where the market is? write a book called How to Fix Him. That one would sell. Based on all the calls I get on my daily broadcast, you know, it's like, you write that one, you know, that's market driven right there.
But we're kind of getting off of what we were talking about just a second ago, but in your example, you're not writing that book because you don't feel like you know that and you're not practicing that.
I'm not going to write. There is one book I'm going to write out of great passion, and there's a need for it because I see the need all the time, but I wouldn't call myself an expert. I would call myself a very, very highly trained layman. And that is, I want to write a book called Bow Boundaries, and it's about dog training.
And I hear dog barking. That's very faintly.
that's my neighbor. But I've got so I've always had big aggressive breeds. I've had 5 German Shepherds, a Rottweiler Doberman, and have a Doberman now we got last year. And I love dog training. I love it, love it, love it. It's so much like working with people as well, but
interesting.
I've been trained in dog training, and so I really want to write that book. But that's not something I'm an expert at. I don't train thousands of dogs. I've trained 6 or 7.
Right. Right. Hey, I got one follow up on the writing process, and I want to ask a couple quick questions on marketing and book sales and that sort of thing. So you did an updated revised version of the book Boundaries, and I think this was 2018. Why do the updated revised version, and how is that writing process different? I'm in the middle of this right now. Yeah. I'm doing an update and it's, I feel like it's so different making something better than creating new. How do you see that?
Yeah, it's an important distinction too in what you're saying, because making something better is one thing. Making something, you said new, I would say making something that's already good be contextualized in the new time in place that we're in now. So boundaries, that's a universal concept that will never go away. That's built into the fabric of the universe, okay? There are limits, you know? Being able to set limits, all of that stuff, that's never going away. But the context changes, right? So one of the things that we were running into with boundaries, because that book came out so long ago, human nature hasn't changed. The problems are still the same. But what we were running into a lot was people are living 100% of their life in some sort of a digital space. And so how do you take the concept of boundaries and execute it in the context of our digital lives? And that was the big driver to redo that book, sort of to update it so it fits into how we do life today.
Oh, interesting.
So it's got a digital section in there I'll give you an example. A lot of marriages were being busted up by people's online behavior, right? What do they do with their kids? How do you deal with your kids in boundaries and the use of their devices and all that? So that didn't exist when we wrote the book. So that
makes sense. So we're used. So it sounds like when
I go back and I look at some stuff and I go, I didn't really say that well. I wish I could say that better.
Right.
Or I wish I could not say that, because today it's still true, but today it triggers something in some people that it didn't trigger back then.
Interesting.
In our context, that, you know, there were a lot of things that we used to say and do that aren't necessarily inherently, you know, whatever, but they're kind of not okay now, and things change.
You know? Sure. That makes sense. So you see the updated and revised version, it sounds like, is the concepts are the same, maybe slightly tweaked, but the context is updated or is different.
Context. I'll give you an example. I wrote a book. This is an example of how books come from life. I was I wrote a book called How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. All right, I can promise you, I deal with, my life has been with CEOs of public companies, Wall Street banks, Wall Street firms. I don't want to be known as a dating coach, right? I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's not what a board of directors of a public company is looking for. In fact, I've gotten that call. Yeah. They want to bring you into our company, but you're a dating expert? No, that's not what I do. But here's how it happened. I was speaking because I do a lot of speaking, and there was this one particular year, after every talk, I could be out there talking about basket weaving, but three women would come up to me. It's always three or four, maybe. Can we ask you a question? I go, sure. Why aren't we dating? I go, I don't know why you're not dating. They go, why? I go, I don't know. I don't know. Do you want to be dating yet? We'll go date. Well, we can. It's not working. So, seriously, this happened like, I'm going to say 5,000 times in a row. And finally I said, I was in Daytona Beach, Florida. I remember the conversation. These 20 somethings women came up to me and said, why are we dating? I said, you know what? I don't know, but I'm going to find out, because this is a problem. So I took a year, established virtual dating groups all across the country, and said, this is a research project for me. I'm going to find out why, if somebody's dating, aren't they dating? Or if one wants to date, aren't they dating? And why can't they find the right one? And so I researched it for a year just because I was curious. And I found out, oh, There's reasons. There's absolutely reasons why it's not working. And so I wasn't going to write a book on it, but I was talking to, I was telling one of the stories in a talk I was giving, and my publisher happened to be in the audience, and she came up and says, "You have to write that book." And I go, "I'm not going to write it, Dave." But she says, "You have to." So I wrote that book. Anyway, it came out again. It came out of the work, right?
Yeah.
So here's the point. I looked at that book the other day. I just did an online event about this. And one of the chapters in there, and you're probably too young to know this phrase, but are you familiar with the term drop your hanky?
Uh-uh.
Seriously.
Seriously.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, in the olden days, if a woman saw a guy that she wanted to get noticed by, she would walk past him and accidentally drop her hanky and keep walking. And he would go, miss, you dropped your hanky. And that would be how they would meet. So in other words, it's a little flirtatious hint. So one of the chapters is called, are you ready for this? It's still in the book. We have to redo this. It's called Drop Your Hanky, ... or Your Palm Pilot. That was cutting edge. Palm Pilot. Do you even know what a Palm Pilot was?
I do know.
It was the first digital assistant people keep their calendar and stuff on before mm-hmm. this. Anyway, we got to change that.
Got it. So the context changes. And context. I think to tie a bow on all this, I would assume that that's pretty similar to the way you do the series. Is it's the same concept, different context, whether yes. it's boundaries with kids, boundaries for leaders, boundaries in marriage, boundaries in dating, et cetera.
Yeah. And one of the things that that I feel passionate about to that point, and in my field, both in leadership as well as psychology, there are authors that write books kind of based on kind of almost like what's hot at the time or what they're learning at the time. And then their next book really disagrees with the first one they wrote because they're kind of growing. And one of the things that's important to me is that that I have a meta psychology of things that I don't think will ever change. And then to drop down from the meta level to the particular is a very important process for me.
Interesting.
I mean, if I wrote a book that said there's no such thing as boundaries, I mean, that's not going to happen, right?
For sure. So. Yeah. So you have a cohesive catalog of ideas that agree with each other. Yeah, hey, we're right at kind of time here. I want to ask a couple final questions. Why do you think these books have sold so well? Like, is there anything particular? Like, obviously, we focus a lot on writing a great book. Your process for like it's very deeply rooted in a need and something that's showing up in your practice. Outside of that, is there anything that you feel like you've done that have really made these books pop? And so, I mean, 20 million copies is just crazy.
You remember when you used the phrase nature or nurture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I suppose that's a good way to look at it. You know, I remember we were in a conversation one day and somebody that had written some book that hadn't done anything, we were friends, so the other person could say this, and said, "How do you write a book that sells that many copies?" And the other friend looked at him and said, "Well, start with writing a good book." You gotta. So there is, I mean, it has to have value because the primary seller of books is word of mouth. I mean, I run into people all the time say, "Yeah, I give your book away all the time. We use it in our company. I want people to know this," you know. So there's no way that you can market a book like a viral community can market on it on its own. So, and that's mainly going to come from the value of what they've experienced in writing this book. Have you read, you know, I do this, you know, on the TV shows I binge. I say to my friends, "Have you seen, you know?" There's no marketing on this stuff. So anyway, it's get it good. And what I mean by good is it's got to provide value for people. It's either entertainment value, escape value, knowledge that they need, something, but it's got to have value. So that's the nature part of it. But if you write a book and people don't know about it, and you're not a fan of that flame, and you're not selling it, good luck, baby. I don't know how that's going to work. And here's what's true. And I'm going to give you the bottom line on this. And I don't know many big authors that would, you know, authors that sell big amounts of books that would, it's what they all, every one of them has told me the same thing. Publishers don't sell books. You sell your book. And if you don't look at it that way, you're going to be very, very disappointed. Okay. And I don't mean by, that's not an all or nothing statement. There are some publishers that are better at giving your book a little bit of help in the market. It happens particularly in launch time, generally speaking.
Yeah.
But if there's not a second rocket that kicks in after a rocket ship takes off, then the one that fires at the ground to get it in the atmosphere, you know, that's what the initial launch marketing budget is usually for, right? You are the fuel that's going to do that. So take boundaries, for example. Let's take that one. My company produced 24 citywide events on boundaries across the United States, citywide events for about 12 years. All right, now I want you to put your head around this. Every month, we're going to two cities and we would do a vision casting event 6 months out before the event. We would bring 100 churches together for boundaries and psychology groups and all this, have a vision casting for the event where they could have booths to market their services to people that came, and then send them back and get them to bring the big groups to the events. We did this for 12 years, 24 cities a year, okay? And people want to say, oh, how does a book, well, because you're out there introducing people to the book. So that would be just one example. There's a thousand different ways. You know, another part of this is I did a weekly broadcast that we linked to 5,000 venues every week for 17 years. It was before streaming. It was a satellite broadcast that went to churches, and now I do the same thing in companies. And I did a daily radio show for a long time. But my point is, it's not going to start for you if you're a new author. It's not going to start at that scale, but you got to get out there and you got to hit the streets and you have to sell your book. John Townsend and I laugh. Our first seminar, the first one we did, and we did everything possible. I'm not kidding. One guy showed up. One guy. It was an all-day seminar. And we stood there in the front with him in the audience, and we gave a seminar for a day. And now, you know, I'll do events with, you know, 300,000-400,000 people in the audience, downlinked in arenas, but it doesn't start that way. It starts because you build it. So don't be dependent.
Yeah.
If your publisher helps you, do another book with them, but don't be dependent on them.
Yeah.
You sell your book.
That's awesome. That's so good.
Is that good with your experience?
Oh, 1,000%. I was on mute, but I was amening. Because it's exactly true. It's the publisher's not going to market the book for you. Another company's not going to market the book for you. you have to market the book. And I think, and what I'm hearing you say, which I think is really good kind of parting piece of advice for folks, is marketing doesn't mean a successful launch. It's that second rocket boost, like you said. So post launch, it's you're continuing to talk about it. You're continuing to point to it. You're continuing to do the work.
I mean, a launch is like, you know, slapping a baby on the butt and it starts to breathe. Okay, it has life, but who's going to feed this kid for the next, you know, few decades, right? And I'm not anti-publishers. I'm anti-authors being too dependent on publishers and not understanding
right.
what they really provide for you. Now, same. Publisher, to me, one of the biggest thing a publisher brings to the table is distribution. And that's changed a lot, you know, and it is changing in the digital space. But publishers can be very, very helpful in getting your books into the channels that you need to get them to. That's why we've got this whole hybrid world, I guess that's what you might call it, where self-publishing, a lot of people, you know, it's really, really a great way to go. And what you also might want to do is add a distribution.
Exactly.
Do you do that? So
exactly.
Or sometimes people go traditional and they, you know, there's no one right way to do this. It's got to fit you.
100%. Dr. Henry, this has been awesome. Hey, where can people go to purchase your books, to find out more about what you're doing on the consulting side of things and kind of the hub for going deeper with you?
Well, the main thing that I would want to make you aware of right now is go to a site called boundaries.me. It's a webpage, www.boundaries.me. And it's a platform that I've built, sort of like, I think Netflix. So you go onto Netflix, you log in, you become a subscriber, you log in, you got all these genres, mystery, thriller, comedies, all that. We go to boundaries.me and you've got the different lanes of, if you're interested in learning more and growing in like a clinical, you know, you want to learn to deal with stress, depression, anxiety, addictions, or dealing with people, then all of those courses are there. All sorts of relationship stuff, from dating to marriage to difficult conversations, resolving conflict, all of that lane is there. And then the performance side, which is goals and dreams. And so I've got over 80 courses on there, and it'll cost you a little more than a cup of coffee, you know, every month to be a subscriber to that platform. So go to boundaries.me. And all the books are available, you know, wherever books are sold, as they say.
Cool. That's great. Hey, guys, check it out. Boundaries.me at a minimum. Get the book. You'll love the book. As I mentioned at the top of this interview, I've bought it for just about everyone at my company. We did a book club on it. I've given it to so many people. To your point of how do you sell books? You write a great book that people word of mouth recommend and buy for others. So boundaries.me or check out the book. Dr. Cloud, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, if we're out of time,
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
A hard stop here.
No, we're good. Good.
Well, I was just going to say something. A lot of times, you know, we're kind of talking here, just it's a little bit contextualizing in what I've done, but a lot of times people need to write a book that their goal is not to have a mass audience, you know, kind of book writing. There are individuals that, this is why the self-publishing thing I think is so great. There are individuals, I've got a friend, for example, and he's really, really good at personal finance. He's really good at fathering and, you know, making a family work and all of that. And part of what he does in his personal kind of life is he had a book self-published, a couple of books that he's written on these things. And he runs into friends and this, that, and the other that don't think that way, but he knows, and he just hands them out. You know, there are CEOs, even of small companies that wouldn't have a mass following, they should write a book. because their company needs it. There are others that write books because it helps their brand. There are others that write books for a lot of different reasons. So don't think of the only reason to write a book is that you want to become a mass market, you know, seller. You might want to write a book because you need a tool. And then also, I mean, mine kind of goes both ways. It can also build your business, whatever your
business
is. So there's a lot of things a book can accomplish.
Yeah, when and just like I'm sure for you, you didn't know that boundaries.me was going to be a thing when you created the first book, right? But you can write it to solve a need. To your point, you can write it to solve a need, and whether that need is 50 people around you or whether that cascades into 20 million books sold, a full platform, online courses, the consulting, like all that stuff, but starting with the need and the purpose that you kind of see right in front of you and helping people with that book.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, if you got a book in you, write it. I don't care if you got to go read it to a tree, write it, sing. Well, there's a song. What is it? I can't remember, but sing anyway, pray anyway. Anyway is the name of the song. And then don't think about what's going to happen. Get it out of your heart. Go write it.
Yeah. Right. That's so great. Well, that's a great place to end. Dr. Cloud, thank you so much.
Okay, man.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.